I'm at total panic on Dalton Kincaid. I drafted Dalton Kincaid in one league, and I'm ready to take the L on it. Not because I think he's not going to be a productive player. I think he'll have better days, whatever, the usage, the snaps, the routes, whatever. Some of that stuff has been there. But here are the two things that had to happen for Dalton Kincaid to go down as a success at his aggressive ADP. One, he had to clearly be the top pass catcher on the Bills, which I was always skeptical about. And then the second thing that had to be true, Dalton, is that the Bills had to be the same old Bills that we knew, which is they're going to throw the ball over the yard, which they are clearly not.
Matt Harmon and Dalton Dillon with a chat on Dalton Kincaid, Yahoo Sports there. And joining us on the Western Hotline is Yahoo Sports, Scott Pianowski. Scott, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, those are my colleagues.
Yeah.
Good intel there.
Yeah. I mean, whenever you and Matt Harmon are together, I'm listening to that quite a bit. Love the work you guys do. On the, you know, there's the Kincaid point here. There's the Bills offense. And then I want to get your thoughts on a larger discussion on NFL offense in general that seems to be playing out even today on ESPN. Mel Kiper saying they should outlaw too high safeties. We're 2 weeks in. Yeah. Offense is down a bit, and there might be a bit of a panic about a trend here. But before we get to that, this Bills offense and what you've seen out of it, maybe it is part of what is happening around the NFL. What are your thoughts on that Kincaid point right there, that it just doesn't look like he's going to be a guy that's going to get the kind of volume you'd need to have drafted him where you did?
Yeah, I mean, it, as always with these things, usually the answer is somewhere in the middle. A lot of tight ends have gotten off to slow pushes for various reasons, and if I were redrafting, I would still have Kincaid as a top 10 tight end, but maybe closer to 10, as opposed to he was probably 5 or 6 in a lot of leagues. But you have to also remember that the second Bills game is just such an outlier result, because the game gets out of hand quickly. They score a touchdown on defense, which takes away an offensive possession. And then once Tua gets hurt, the game was pretty much decided anyway, but once Tua gets hurt, the Bills can basically just do whatever they want just to run the clock out. And so Allen ends up with no volume. The passing game ends up with no volume. But that's not representative of how most games are going to play out. But, you know, Mel's right in the sense that, I mean, obviously the two-deep shell has taken over as the predominant defense. And just what every team is thinking, okay, we dare you to string together 15 plays. And the idea, the ethos, and a lot of coaches have, you know, defensive coaches have had this mindset that Dungy Colts used to do it. Belichick did it for years. You can move the ball on us, but eventually you're going to have a holding penalty. You're going to take a sack. You're going to have a negative play. That's going to blow up the drive, and the most that you'll get off this is a field goal. Maybe you'll punt, and you know, as long as you don't score touchdowns against us, you're not going to beat us. So it's up to the league, the passing games, to adjust to it. Another thing that's, I think, part of this is a lot of young quarterbacks taking off this year, and all three rookie quarterbacks are still looking for their first touchdown pass. We had half the league change its play caller this year, of the 15, 16, 17 different play callers. So some of the guys are struggling out of the gate trying to figure out what their talent is. We've already seen a benching in Carolina. We're just praying that Andy Dalton can be okay, so Deontay Johnson and maybe even Chuba Hubbard can be fantasy factors, because, you know, that Carolina looks like a train wreck right now. But and with the way preseason has changed and summer scheduling has changed and rules and all that, we know that the first couple of weeks a lot of times look like glorified exhibition seasons. I think we'll see a crisper set of offensive results in week 3.
Is the biggest takeaways of the way defenses are playing offenses right now that rushing for quarterbacks is huge in fantasy right now?
For sure. I mean, the key is you have to try not to be reckless about it. I think people are holding their breath every time Jaden Daniels runs, because he's not the thickest guy and he's not really sure how to slide yet. But yeah, obviously having a mobile quarterback, it can break the defense's back, and then it makes you, a lot of times it makes you not want to play man, because then you turn the back to the quarterback and then he has you. And then if you play zone, zone is usually solvable for an experienced quarterback, because you just have to find an open spot in the zone and sit down, and it can be easier to matriculate the ball down the field, as Hank Stram would have said. A wonderful use of matriculation. It doesn't apply to what the definition is, but it still sounds great whenever Hank Stram said it. But the mobile quarterback, this is a sweet spot there where you want to run. You don't want it to be the staple of what you do. Also, interesting trend in week 2. After they didn't get the tush push going in the opening game, the Brazil game, they were successful with it in week 2. So maybe just think of all the overreactions, right? After week one, it's like, oh, my God, thank God I have Anthony Richardson, or thank God I have Saquon Barkley, or, you know, and then in week two, things are just totally different with a lot of teams, and a lot of the results are flipped. You know, Cooper Kupp looked like one of the winning picks of the year. He's hurt in week two. All the Rams are hurt right now. Isaiah Pacheco may not play again this season. Who knows when McCaffrey was the first pick in a lot of leagues. I don't know when he's going to play, if he's going to play. It's just the chaos of the snow globe NFL and fantasy football. And a lot of my teams are right now kind of underwater, and I'm trying to find free agents that make sense. It hasn't been that easy.
Yeah. Two guys that are still widely available. The top two fantasy quarterbacks through 2 weeks are Baker Mayfield and Derek Carr. Mm-hmm. One of those two continuing what they're doing, or what's more sustainable, I guess, between those two right now if you're looking for a quarterback pickup?
Man, I get the Saints totally wrong. Kamara was one of my biggest fades. I do have Olave shares. I like Shaheed for what he was, but I'm surprised he's been this good. And it seems like a real big key there is Clint Kubiak coming in. The Saints last year didn't want to run play action, didn't want to use pre-snap motion, which is, like, to me, like a basketball team not wanting to run the pick and roll, right? I don't understand it at all, but Kubiak comes in. All right, you beat Carolina the first week. Pretty good. Carolina's lousy. I get it. But then they go to Dallas, a team that people respect, and they beat the absolute snot out of them. And, you know, Carr last year, with index quarterback rating, I think it was like 115, where 100 is average. I mean, he's always been a little bit underrated, I think underappreciated. They've unlocked Shaheed as a really good player. Obviously, Olave is going to get there. I don't think your league's probably unsophisticated enough to get Olave cheap, but if it were, even at a minor discount, I'd be happy to get that. And the big change, it seems like, in Tampa Bay is that Godwin's back in the slot, and that's where he does his best work. And that feels like an obvious miss for me, that I should have anticipated better production from Godwin. We know Mike Evans is headed to the Hall of Fame. Again, you have to take a little bit of Tampa's results with a grain of salt, because they played Washington in week one, and they have easily been the worst pass defense in fantasy football in the real NFL since the beginning of the 2003 season. It should get Jamar Chase and Joe Burrow going on Monday night. Why are they playing two Monday night games at the same time? I don't understand that. But, Baker, you know, another guy, Geno Smith, by the way, is probably another great value if you're in a league that starts two quarterbacks, or maybe you took Geno Smith or Baker or Derek Carr. Maybe they were your backup quarterback in a one quarterback league, and now you're thinking, maybe I want to start these guys. I like a lot of the concepts they're running in Seattle. Three good receivers. They finally got JSN unlocked after a quiet week one. And I think week two is closer to who JSN is. You don't expect anybody to get 16 targets every week, but they didn't know what to do with him in week one. But I think week two is closer to the type of results we can expect from JSN, and I'll be starting him proactively most of the year.
Scott Pianowski on the Wesser Hotline. A couple of the big questions in fantasy this week, like who you're replacing injured guys with. If you're an Isaiah Pacheco owner, I mean, waivers is run already in 99.9% of leagues. But where are your chips down for who's going to kind of fill in there in the Chiefs' backfield?
Carson Steele is who I would bet on, because he's got the chance to get a heavy role. I mean, P. Ryan is a situational player, good in pass protection. He's a quality receiver. I wouldn't say he's electric or slippery, but he's a reliable player. I think they only signed Kareem Hunt because they know him. He knows the playbook. He's on the practice squad. I think he's more of a long shot. What you have to do, this is not any illumination when I say this, but what you have to do at running back is just pick up backups who are interesting, who are one injury away from maybe being special. And then Bucky Irving, perhaps, in Tampa Bay. Ty Chandler, perhaps, in Minnesota. Ray Davis, perhaps, in Buffalo, who you guys know all about. This guy's maybe, I don't think Chase Brown's ever going to be special in Cincinnati, but Zach Moss hasn't done much through 2 weeks. I'm curious to see who gets the better foot in week three. Again, they should control that game against Washington. But you're just looking for, because, again, any running back who comes into a starting job before waivers, it's like, okay, you just blow most of your fab to get that player. The whole idea, maybe the Cowboys eventually will settle on Rico Dowdle. I don't know that his upside is as exciting as maybe Irving or Chandler, or guys like that. But you're looking at some of these backup running backs and thinking, who could be, you want to try to be a week early on waivers. Who could be the big guy next week? How can I get my hands on that player? And remember, situational upside, right? Contingent upside is much more significant at running back, where all the Rams receivers are hurt. All that means is that maybe DeMarcus Robinson is a wide receiver 3. Maybe Whittington comes into some fantasy value. But there's no
when Puka Nacua gets hurt or Cooper Kupp gets hurt, nobody goes to the moon, right? If Tyreek Hill got hurt in Miami, it's not like somebody would step up and all of a sudden be great. But in running back, we're just trying to solve the volume. If you can get 15 touches from any player, that player is probably going to have fantasy value.
Scott Pianowski joining us on the Western Hotline, chatting a little fantasy football heading into week three. Whether you're, got questions on dynasty, redraft, whatever it might be, waivers, you can give us a call and throw a question our way if you'd like. You know, it's funny, like, as you mentioned the Saints there, they looked at one point to be in the preseason, I'll stay away from this offense altogether. There's not a lot of trust to be had there, and it looks the way that it does. How about going the other way, Scott? Teams that you were maybe surprised to see, the offense and how it's looking, it looked like a strong group to be a part of, but now you want nothing to do with them. I'm thinking like Rams, maybe Dolphins, especially with an injury. Anybody else that you'd be a little worried about offensively as a team? I know Washington is one for this because Daniels is not throwing the ball when he's pressured. He's just taking it himself.
Yeah, we talk about how important coaching is, and Cliff Kingsbury is putting Terry McLaurin, one of my favorite players, on the same part of the formation just about every play, and he's not moving him around. So he's making him very easy to defend. McLaurin's done almost nothing. Hard team to trust. What about Chicago, right? We see Caleb Williams land there. And you think, oh, well, he's going to succeed. He's got DJ Moore. They added Keenan Allen. They drafted Adunze, who's very highly respected. They have quality at tight end. They have, I think, a somewhat respectable running back room, but the line has been so bad, and Caleb looks just not ready to play. I wonder if maybe the Patriots had it right, sitting Drake May. Even though New England's been competitive, they're taking a ton of quarterback pressures. Jacoby Brissett's been hit a lot. Maybe it's just better to have Drake May out of the line of fire. He doesn't have to face the Jets this week or the Niners next week. Let him learn. Let him just, Bo Nix looks overmatched right now. Caleb Williams looks overmatched right now. I don't think Daniels has been great. He's made some plays with his legs, but I thought the Bears' offense was going to be a lot more interesting. And even, the Chiefs are, they're not a stay away, but they were an average offense last year. They got it cooking in the second, maybe the late part of the year, and obviously in the playoffs, right? But there's a lot of disappointment, and Worthy didn't do much in week two. Kelsey's been a non-factor. I think Rice is a special player, and he's been a big hit there. Pacheco gets hurt. Mahomes has only been outside the, 10, 12, 14, something like that, that fantasy quarterback for the last maybe 10 games or so. You always think Andy Reid's going to figure it out. Well, who can you play in Pittsburgh, right? I mean, Pickens isn't getting any significant target volume, even though he makes a splashy play once in a while. They use multiple backs. Fields is going to run some, but he hasn't been running electric. I look at Pittsburgh, right? How many teams want to win with good defense and hiding the quarterback? Pittsburgh's one of those teams. New England's one of those teams. It's a race. In a lot of these games I'm looking at this week, the Bears-Colts game, it's a race to 20 points, right? Is Anthony Richardson so green? Is he going to ruin Michael Pittman Jr., right? I will give you one offense I was really worried about that I've changed my mind on. Somehow, Gardner Minshew won the starting job with the Raiders. He completed 48.5% of his passes in the preseason, largely playing against backups, playing against teams in vanilla defenses. He currently leads the NFL in completion percentage. I think it's like 77-78%, something like that. Davante Adams was a screaming value all summer. I was nervous about him because I thought the offense could maybe go down the drain. He's been fine. And Brock Bowers, oh, my God. And I'm getting nothing out of this. Just think of everything we said about Kyle Pitts, and he's a unicorn. He's a once-in-a-generation guy. The Kyle Pitts we were promised is here in the NFL now, and his name is Brock Bowers.
Yeah, Bowers, it's funny. Like I was reading about that. Pitts was sold as this idea of a guy you could line up at, in line a little bit, or as a big slot, but he could play like a receiver. He's a matchup nightmare. We hear that a lot about these tight ends, right? And we've heard that about Kincaid, with Evan Engram. You've got your pass-catching tight ends.
Yep.
But then you have the guys like Gronk was different because Gronk was truly great at doing both things. And the guy that can play in line and be that good of a receiver, that is not as normal or not as easy to get as just drafting a tight end that can catch passes, because even though these pass-catching tight ends are good, it's not like we're catching anybody by surprise anymore.
Right. When you talk about Gronk, I think Kittle's the same way in San Francisco. If you told George Kittle, we're going to run the ball 60 times next week, or our offensive line is beat up, you're going to play tackle, I think George Kittle would be like, great, what do you want me to do, coach? He's just one of those guys. And I think he's eventually going to be in the Hall of Fame, like Kelsey obviously will be, Gronkowski will be. But you're right. I mean, we always hear, he's a receiver. He's a hybrid player. Think of all the ballyhoo over Isaiah Likely in week one. What the heck do we do with that team, right? Baltimore, how do they lose to the Raiders with a multiple score lead in the fourth quarter? And what do we do with their tight end room, right? I mean, I'm ranking Andrews and Likely in the top 10, but if you told me either one of them was going to be outside the top 20 this week, I'd believe you. The team that has to find its identity. But the tight end has been, it's been a very poor production for tight. First of all, so many of the tight ends are touchdown dependent more than other positions because it's not a volume grabbing position like running back or receiver. So you usually need a touchdown to pay off, and the touchdown passing has been so down through 2 weeks. Some of these guys, maybe they're, you know, with Pitts, I know he doesn't run a route on every passing snap where the receivers in Atlanta pretty much do. That's why I think Darnell Mooney is a nice ad right now because he's on the field every time they throw the ball. And Pitts is doing a lot of chipping. Sometimes he stays in to block, although he's generally seen as a hybrid receiver for them. But it's been a really slow push off for tight ends, especially if you went vanity. If you went with Kelce, Trey McBride has paid off, but Kelsey's been a disappointment. Sam Laporte has done almost nothing. Kincaid, of course, we've talked about. He's off to a slow start. I still think Kincaid will come around. It's just a matter of maybe he won't be what we thought he was before the season. But if you're disappointed, man, here's the thing. There are more wrong answers than right answers, right? And there's a lot of this stuff is hazy. And I still think we have to give the rust and the glorified preseason weeks one and two that has to play into some of it. I think things will look a little bit cleaner. Things won't magically fix. But we'll feel, I think, better about the offensive landscape in about 2 weeks.
You get anything from tonight's game to either confirm priors or, I don't know, announce somebody is legit? I mean, Ramondre Stevenson's looking really nice. And the Jets offense, I mean, I don't know what the visions were with Rodgers at the helm. It does not look like any sort of great offense. And again, not many do right now. And
the guy we're also interested in, I think, Scott, is probably Hunter Henry, right? Because his usage was crazy high last week.
All good points. Stevenson, his value gets a real bounce from the defense being competitive and the Patriots being able to keep games close. Really, they pushed Cincinnati around in week one, and they easily could have beaten Seattle last week. So I thought New England had a chance to be the worst team in football. I don't feel that way right now. They're going to be a competitive team, a losing record for sure, but a team that doesn't get blown out more often than not. So that keeps Stevenson afloat. And you mentioned Henry. What was it? I think 12 targets last week. I believe he has the highest route percentage of all tight ends. He's running a route on like 89% of their pass plays. So that's where the cheddar is. Their wide receiver room is very young. I mean, maybe eventually Polk will be a special player. It's not going to happen right away. I know he had a touchdown last week. But as long as Hunter Henry is healthy, and that's never a sure thing with him, but he's easily somebody you could start every week. I want to see the Jets. I talk about teams that want to win with defense and maybe hide the offense. It's not that they have to hide Rodgers, but it's a defense-oriented team with New York. I know they didn't play well in week one. The Niners pushed him around, which was kind of shocking to me. But maybe Garrett Wilson was drafted around too early. I was probably guilty of that. But where's the volume in New York? Right? I think a lot of weeks Aaron Rodgers is going to throw 26 passes. They play at a slow pace. I'm not a big Nat Hackett fan running the offense, although, of course, Rodgers as a tenured quarterback is basically the offensive coordinator too. But and I talked about contingency upside. Man, Braylon Allen, youngest player in the league. Oh, my God. Breece Hall's terrific, and he's certainly not going to lose a significant share of the work. But if he ever got hurt, we would want Braylon Allen. So in your league, I mentioned Chandler earlier. I mentioned Bucky Irving earlier. But I actually think the most interesting, highest upside non-starting running back in the league right now might be Braylon Allen.
Scott Pianowski of Yahoo Sports. Thanks, Scott. We'll talk next week.
Thanks, guys.
You can follow him online. It's on Twitter. It's Scott_Piano WSKI. So
I'm still not recovered from my loss to you last Sunday.
Oh, we should have talked to him about that. A Drake London touchdown, 34 seconds left, 0.5. It wasn't just that.
That wasn't even the worst event of it. You winning by 0.5 with, I've got Kyler Murray, you have Trey McBride. How does the Cardinals tight end score a touchdown without Kyler Murray being involved?
That's true.
He falls on a fumble in the end zone is the answer.
That's pretty great.
That 2-point difference, or actually it's a 4-point difference,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That changed the game. Oh, the worst loss ever.
Well, if you want me to make you mad about something else, I'm ready. NFL.com, 167 modern era players nominated for the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2025.
Okay.
First time eligible includes Eli Manning. Your other quarterbacks that are eligible that made it to the final 167, okay?
Okay.
You tell me how many of these quarterbacks you would put in over Eli Manning.
Okay, love it. Let's do it.
Ready?
Yes.
Josh, give me some NFL music.
Quarterbacks I would put in the Hall of Fame over Eli Manning that made it to this final round.
Here's the game we play.
Or this
Here's
cut.
The game. It's going to be called Eli or, I don't know.
Or Shmeli.
Yeah, sure. He's going to say yes or no if he would put a quarterback in over Eli because he's an Eli hater. You, Josh,
yes, I am.
Your job is to say, oh, come on, or I'll allow it. Fair?
Okay.
All right. Mark Bulger.
Wait a minute. What was this cut again? How many players?
167 total. Like, listen, if I
Mark Bulger made it even to 167?
Yep.
All right, well, Eli's going in over Mark Bulger.
Okay.
Mark Bulger.
Randall Cunningham.
Randall Cunningham.
There's a case there. Jake DeLome.
Mark Bulger, two-time Pro Bowler. Eli.
Doug Flutie.
Eli.
Rich Gannon.
Rich Gannon.
I don't know. That's...
He won an NFL MVP.
Yes, he did.
That's teetering.
There was a year where he was the best quarterback in the league. Eli Manning never did that. Not even came close. Look at this. Rich Gannon, two-time All-Pro. How many times is Eli Manning a two-time All-Pro? Or an All-Pro? Answer, zero.
Rich Gannon.
He was never second-team All-Pro.
Okay. Gannon in over Eli. I'll allow it. Jeff Garcia.
Eli. Right?
You sounded strained on that one.
Yeah, because I saw Garcia probably more in his last few years, and wasn't he at his best like right away?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't debut until he was 29 years old.
He was in the CFL.
Okay. Who made more Pro Bowls, Jeff Garcia or Eli Manning? Answer. I think it's Jeff Garcia. Pro Bowl reference is weird about this stuff. It's because like maybe it's voted versus if you actually went to the to the Pro Bowl. They were both four-time Pro Bowlers.
There okay, there you go. Tie. Donovan McNabb or Eli Manning?
Ooh. Donovan McNabb.
All right, no argument here.
He was a better quarterback than Eli Manning was.
The name of the game is called Eli or Bust.
Eli or Bust.
Thank you, Corey. Good tweet on that. Good text on that. All right, you put McNabb
in. McNabb's going in over Eli.
Steve McNair or Eli Manning?
Air McNair? Yeah, I'm going Steve McNair.
And then Tony Romo.
Yes.
Those are your 10 quarterbacks.
I'm putting Tony Romo in too.
Those are your 10 quarterbacks eligible for the Pro Football Hall of Fame this year.
Where'd I rank him? Like sixth?
You had Romo, McNair, McNabb, Gannon, and Cunningham. Maybe you didn't really see a lot of
Cunningham. I would still put Cunningham in.
Okay, so sixth. Yeah.
Sixth.
Yeah. This is a fun list because do you want to know some of these names? Like running backs. There are 31 running backs available for this Hall of Fame, this year's Hall of Fame class.
Hall of Fame is going to be strange with running backs going forward.
Okay.
Because of the eras and everything.
Can I just give you some of these?
Sure. 31 of them?
31.
Okay.
I'm trying to find like the most ridiculous one. Charlie Garner.
I think that's before my time, right?
Thomas Jones.
Okay, hold on.
Vontae Leach.
He's a fullback, I think.
Fullback John Kuhn.
Wait, the guy from Green Bay?
Yeah.
No. Come on. John Kuhn.
First time eligible is Marshawn Lynch and Darren Sproles.
He should get in. Should Darren Sproles get in the Hall of Fame? He was a scat back, right?
And a kick returner, punt returner. Yep.
Okay. That's, I don't know. That one, skeptical.
I'm trying to find like a Bills player on here.
He had 1,000 yards once in his career. I mean, Marshawn Lynch. Marshawn Lynch is getting in.
Okay.
For sure.
Receivers. First time eligible, Demaryius Thomas. Also on the list.
Peace.
Like, we've got Joe Horn.
All right.
Derek Mason. Jordy Nelson.
Jordy Nelson.
Right.
Yeah, no. Not into that. Okay. Jordy Nelson, though. I'm looking. He had a 1,200-yard season, a 1,300-yard season, a 1,500-yard season. I mean, he had a few years there. He had a five-year stretch where he was like a top five receiver in football, it looks like.
All right.
It's okay. That's not that. That's not as ridiculous as John Kuhn getting in the Hall of Fame.
Open segment when we return. If you want to give us a call, give us a call. We'll get to you. Otherwise, we got our three-leg parlay, our Thursday three-way coming at you for Jets-Patriots coming up on WGR.